Be the right club. Be the right club today. Yes!
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another Be the Right Club Today podcast. Our next guest is a senior writer for Golf Week, and she was the first female president of the Golf Writers Association of America, Ms. Beth Ann Nichols. Beth, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me. Happy to join.
Beth, we're excited to have you on. We want to know everything that's going on in the women's world of golf right now. Chevron Championship, Curtis Cup, a lot going on.
Absolutely. It's an exciting stretch, the big summer stretch. So we obviously just finished up the U.S. Women's Open, where there was a historic $10 million purse. First time that two women in the same event have made seven-figure checks. So that was a really big deal, with the winner getting $1.8 million. And Minji Lee, that's the highest check to date in the women's game. And then Mina Haragai, she won over $1 million as well. So a lot to celebrate there with the USGA and the great momentum going forward.
So Beth, we have a player that's about to turn pro. She had a really good college career, Girling Core. She played at Baylor, was an All-American for four years. And we always talk about, you know, the differences in the purses between men and women and why, and some of those discussions. And we'll get into some of the drama with LIV Golf and the PGA Tour with you in a little bit. But what's the next step for women's golf? Like, how do we continue to kind of bridge that gap and I guess showcase how good all these ladies really are?
Well, I think, first of all, one of the most impactful things that Mike Wan did in his tenure as LPGA commissioner is he got all the governing bodies to sort of buy in and become part of the LPGA. And what I mean by that is the RNA wasn't really associated with at all with the British Open Championship, now the AIG Women's Open, until a few years ago. So it was the LGU, the Ladies Golf Union, that ran that tournament in conjunction with the LPGA. And when the RNA came along, everything was elevated. Same with the KPMG Women's PGA, which used to be the LPGA Championship. So when the PGA of America got involved in a women's major and the RNA as well, both of those events automatically became stronger, and that pushes all the other purses, that pushes the USGA, that pushes the Evian, which now has another sponsor in Amundi. And then of course Chevron becoming a part of the LPGA is huge, because everyone around the world can recognize the name Chevron. So, that's a big deal, not only, getting title sponsors, but getting the right partners, the right title sponsors that carry, sort of gravitas like a Chevron does, that sort of turns heads. That's huge for the LPGA in and of itself. And I think the next step then is to get all of the regular week-to-week events to get, to increase their purses. So, right now, 15 events on the LPGA schedule are $2 million or less. So that's the next step, to be able to, I think, and a lot of players think, all the purses should be a minimum of $2 million. So, I think that, a lot of that, it comes down to, TV exposure, the amount of people that tune in, and some of that falls on the players to do their part.
Well, I think the LPGA is fun to watch. I can relate to them a lot more than I can the men now, as a senior golfer. Chase hits it like the young guys do, but I certainly don't. And I like watching the women's swings. They've really elevated their swings over the last few years. I'm sure data and TrackMan and everything has helped do that, but they're fun to watch.
Yeah, I think part of that too is, a lot of players now, they didn't play other sports growing up. They chose golf early on, whereas, 20 years ago, you had a lot of multi-sport athletes who, played a little bit of everything and took up golf, you know, maybe later because they saw that as the only avenue to play professionally and make a good living. And so I think when you look at, you know, a lot of players now, they're getting good instruction from a really young age. And that's a huge part, I think, of, and plus you're getting, you know, players who could be playing other sports, you know, good athletes that are choosing to play golf because, you know, you can make more money. So I think that that's a big deal. And of course, all the South Korean players, they have fantastic swings for the most part.
And Beth, yeah. Go ahead, Al.
Well, what I was going to say is the AJGA events have really done a lot to help kids learn how to compete at an early age. And, you know, although there were junior girls golf tournaments, there's a lot more of them now than there ever has been. So they're more seasoned by the time they do turn professional.
100%, you know, and I think what's interesting, you know, to bring Mike Wan up again, you know, now as the CEO of the USGA, he's having, you know, run the LPGA for so long, he got an up close understanding of what the rest of the world is doing. And when you look at the federations in Sweden, for example, you know, you had Ingrid Lindblad, the young lady from LSU who was, you know, leading the Open there for a little while and played with Annika and was in contention. She got a caddy. She got into the event last minute. The Swedish Golf Federation called Sophie Gustafsson and said, "Can you come caddy?" and paid for her to come over. I mean, when I say like a week prior to the event, she didn't have a caddy. And who do they get? They get Sophie Gustafsson, you know, who's played in you know, so many Solheim Cups, you know, won, you know, over 20 times worldwide, you know, a fantastic player. So, you know, that's just one example of the way the federation of a country, you know, comes together to support their top players. And they're with those players from a very young age when they become part of their program to, you know, once they even bridge the gap into the professional world. And so Mike Wan is looking to launch. He just brought Heather Daly Donofrio, who was a longtime LPGA executive. She's now working for the USGA, and she's going to manage this program, which will be a developmental program for both men's and women's golf, boys and girls, in the United States. And she's talking to different countries to see what they do and I assume get best practices and create a national team, a national program for the United States with it, which I think is really exciting.
And Beth, that was kind of part of my follow-up question. You know, you mentioned all the success that the South Korean ladies have been having and a lot of the Asian ladies in general having a lot of success. What do you think it is? Do you think it's just good quality coaching? Do you think it's specializing early? If you could compare from, you know, the American ladies to the South Korean ladies, what's the difference?
Well, I definitely think what we just talked on, you know, good coaching, right from the beginning for sure. I mean, when you look at, you know, the quality of their swings, but they also have this incredible stepping stone of tours where when you turn professional in Korea, you know, they have more than just the Epson tour and just the way that you can kind of progress over there professionally and the amount of money that is given to players on a sponsorship level where they don't have to worry so much financially when they turn professional because so many Korean companies are backing female golfers, you know, it's a huge relief for a lot of those players when they do come to the LPGA that they don't have to worry about paying their bills. So they can go through, you know, this wonderful system that's, you know, more similar to the men's game in the United States and progress, you know, until if they want to come to the LPGA, they can, but they can make certainly a great living on the KLPGA as well. So, you know, I definitely think that their national program is great. I think that, you know, this can all be traced back to one player and that's Sari Park and what she did coming over here. And that actually kickstarted and fueled what we're seeing throughout Asia, that I think that all comes back to her. So, yeah, I think it's, the programs that they have over there are really impressive, and the players are very focused from a young age on one thing.
Talk about Curtis Cup coming up.
Yeah, it's really interesting because it's an unusual situation that we just had a Curtis Cup last year. Because of COVID, it's back-to-back Curtis Cups. And you have five players returning from last year's team. And it's for on the United States, that is. And it's really exciting because, you know, you have some of the most impressive players in the game on the American team. And Rose Zhang and Rachel Heck and Amari Avery. Amari Avery's new to the team this year. Latana Stone, who you remember from the Augusta National Women's Amateur. It should be a fantastic event, first and foremost, because it's being contested at Marion, which is a huge deal. It's the first time the Curtis Cup is being hosted there, and Marion is a future site for the US Women's Open, which I'm really excited about. So I feel like this is kind of a preview of what we could see, you know, later down the road for a women's open. So I really think this team in particular, you know, has a lot of players on it that could have long successful careers on the LPGA. So it's an exciting one to watch.
Beth, playing courses like Marion, you know, obviously distance is important on the PGA Tour. You see this big push and distance from all different angles, you know. Do we see that as much on the LPGA side? Do we see a chase for distance happening as much, or would you say that they're maybe still kind of, I wouldn't say lagging behind is not the best term, but they're delayed in their pursuit of going all out distance?
Well, I think there certainly have been plenty of examples of players who have looked at the top of the money list and saw an Arya Jatanagarn or Alexi Thompson or, you know, Nelly Korda and thought, you know, that they needed to go out and chase distance, and it backfired. So that certainly has happened, you know, time and time again. However, we can just look at this past week at Minji Lee, at a player that, you know, you can look at her driving stats and see the fruit of her labor. She has spent a lot of time going hard at it in the gym, you know, in the off season and working on speed. And she has gained quite a bit of distance over the last few years. And that's enabled her to be a little bit more aggressive, because she really wasn't typically an aggressive player. Just an beautiful ball striker, extremely steady. And now she can kind of take it up a notch. And so you saw her, pretty much run away from the field at Pine Needles last week. And, you know, you combine that already incredible calm demeanor that she has with, you know, a little bit more of an explosive game with, you know, a extremely strong iron player. And you feel like she's on the verge of becoming the first Australian to reach number one in the world. And I say that with an asterisk, because most people don't know that the Rolex rankings didn't start until 2006. Otherwise, Kari clearly would have been atop it earlier in her career. But as far as since the Rolex rankings have been around, no Australian has been number one. And her counterpart, Hannah Green, another Australian who works with the same instructor, same thing. She's been successful in gaining distance of late, and you know, talked about how differently she's attacking golf courses with different targets, different sight lines, how it just feels like she's playing the same venues, you know, looking at them very differently these days. So the women's game on the whole has certainly gotten longer, but as you say, not to the same extent as the men.
When they were here at Champions, I went over and watched some, and they hit it out there pretty good. There's several of them that hit it out there pretty darn good. And I'd hate to know I had to get in a driving contest with them.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, talking to Yanni Zen years ago about the beginning, how did you get so much power? How did you get so long? And you know, in the beginning, when she was first getting lessons, it wasn't, her instructor said, I don't care where it goes, just try to hit it as hard as you can. And that didn't used to be the way, you know, girls typically got into the game. It was more, you know, just trying to keep it in the fairway and nice and steady. And now it's different. And now it's more in line with the men, you know, I feel like it's in terms of in the beginning, just hit it hard. And that's how young girls are being taught. And I think that's important because that's the way it's heading.
Well, and it's interesting. Most boys put a driver in their hand and they swing hard at it anyway. And most girls
like to hit it
straight, and it drives them crazy. A lot of our girls, it drives them crazy when they don't hit it online. And I'm like, hey, get up there and send it. So it's kind of funny how, from a personality standpoint, you can see why the games are still just a little bit different, just because of you. Most of the girls don't want to just go get up there and free will it because they're worried about where it goes. And the guys are like, I'll send it down there. I don't care, you know?
Yeah. It's interesting because I was talking to Grant Waite last week. He works with Patty Tavitanicat and Gabby Ruffles and a few other players on tour. And we were talking about the difference in short game and what he's been working on with Patty. And he said that, you know, he's noticed that a lot of the female players that he works with, you know, they don't have this variety of shots around the greens and they don't practice that, and they didn't grow up trying to hit really weird shots. and it was funny to listen to him because that was my experience growing up as well. You know, like the guys were, we had a little chipping green, putting green right in front of the pro shop that had this huge window, and the guys would sit across from the window and they'd hit these flop shots and they'd, you know, just do all these, you know, crazy things. And I was always scared to death I was going to hit the window. so I was great at the bump and run, but I wasn't really into, you know, doing, you know, creative shots because I didn't want to fail. And so, whereas the guys, you know, totally different attitude. They didn't mind looking silly, you know, even if there hadn't been a window there, I think it would have been the same. But, you know, it just was a different mentality. And so he said that, Grant said that at Isleworth, he has made a point of encouraging Patty, you know, really strongly encouraging her to go over to Lee Jansen or Danny Willett, you know, Retief, whoever's out there practicing, and ask, you know, go ask them about different shots that they're hitting around the green, and, you know, and learn some different ways to do something, you know. And so I thought that was really cool and rang true to me in terms of just a difference a lot of times in personalities.
Yeah.
So you just talked about you feared failure. Mm-hmm. We talk about that a lot on here. You know, that holds people back. And, you know, you're afraid to look silly. I think you used the word silly. And for everybody listening out there, you know, you have to experiment. Just like, I mean, I don't really want to bring this up, but the COVID vaccine, they had to experiment to get to something that they felt like would work. And that's the same thing that happens in a golf swing. You have to experiment. You have to succeed with that experiment. And there's where your confidence begins to come from. So I would encourage everybody to experiment and don't be afraid to look silly.
I agree with you. Now looking back, I wish I had done it differently.
It's not too late, Beth.
That's very true. Very true. Very true.
Beth, so let's segue to the guys' game a little bit. What's your take on we had a big announcement today with Bryson and Patrick Reed joining the LIV Tour. What's your take on everything the PGA Tour is dealing with and in my opinion, it's a huge announcement that the USGA came out and said, you know, we're not going to, if you qualified for our event, you can play in our event. And that I don't know if Bryson and Patrick had planned on releasing this today or not, or wait until they heard from the USGA. It could have just been a coincidence, but there's a lot going on right now with the PGA Tour. What are your thoughts?
It's hard to keep up, right? It seems like some massive piece of news, you know, drops every hour. It feels like it's a Tiger not playing as well in the US Open. You know, I think, it's, especially when players changing their tune in terms of what they said not very long ago, and then, you know, what they're doing, what their actions are now, also hard to keep up. But, you know, I think it's, as far as the USGA, it was perhaps so late in the game in terms of their criteria had already been laid out for this particular championship. And so, you know, I don't know that necessarily means that, you know, they can't change some criteria going forward, it will be interesting to see what they do, you know, in future years. But, you know, it's, man, it's, I look at the women's game it's not a stretch to think that the LPGA is in a vulnerable position to have, you know, potentially some competition as well. And it's already controversial that, you know, the Saudi Golf Saudi is backing several events on the LET, and it's to the point where if you want to keep your card on the Ladies European Tour, you pretty much have to play in their events because the purses are so big and there's so many of them that if you had a moral stance on the subject, you have to choose already between your livelihood and whether or not you're going to, you know, if you're going to take your moral stance and lose your card potentially. So it's very different than the men in terms of their motivation for why they're playing. You know, it's so the spotlight is a little bit different on the women than it is the men, even though we saw several women with the Aramco series on their hat and you know, Saudi Golf on their sleeve just last week, and you know, in terms of being their sponsors. So you know, it's you know, it'll be interesting to see how things continue to unfold and how many you got to wonder how many years they're going to do this. And are you as a player taking a risk to jump ship to go to something that might not last very long, you know, but I guess maybe you don't care because you got all your money. I don't know. I mean, it's for the women, you know, the men, the PGA Tour can sustain this, I think. But something similar for the women's game, I don't think so. I think it would crush the LPGA.
Well, it's such a controversial thing. I sometimes wonder if I ought to say anything or not say anything about it. I will say this. I do understand how difficult it is for these players to say no to that kind of money. And I mean, I would appeal to everybody listening out there to put yourself in that situation. And could you say no to that kind of money? It's easy for Tiger Woods to say no to that kind of money because he's already a billionaire. He can't spend the money that he's got. But a lot of those other people are not in that position. And they're thinking not only of themselves, but they're thinking of their wife and their children and their grandchildren for that matter. And, you know, it's a tough thing to, you know, I'm loyal to the tour. I spent 25 years out there. I was 6 years on the board. The tour was good to me, and I was taught to never bite the hand off that fed me. But at the same time, that's a lot of money that those people are talking about. So, you know, I've mixed emotions both ways.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think at some point, you know, you have to draw a line in the sand, though, in terms of who are you comfortable taking money from and who are you comfortable representing, too. And that, I think those are fair questions for every player, that it's coming directly from the government. And so, you know, I understand why, you know, they're getting some tough questions right now, and I think they should be.
Well, These are young people that we're talking about for the most part. Phil's an exception to the thing. But, you know, I mean, it's easy for me to say that. I'm 64 years old now. And, yeah, sure, I've got a line drawn in the sand, and I'm not going to take that money. But we're talking about youthful people. And, you know, I see both sides. And I think it's a tough spot to be in. I think there's going to be some – you know, you've mentioned how long is it going to last? Mm-hmm. They got so much money, they probably make it last as long as they want to make it last. And right now, they're getting an awful lot of money for their oil right now. So,
right,
who knows?
Yeah. Well, as you say, it's however they want to make it last. So, you know, I mean, whenever they feel like. So, I guess that's it. It's up to their whim, right? You know, and when it goes away, nothing like it is going to take its place because it's such an unusual model. it's crazy money, right? So no one else is going to come along and offer anything like that to take its place. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see, you know, what their long-term plan is.
Well, the PGA Tour has been around for a long, long time, and it's going to continue to be around. The other side of the coin, I presented the case that the people that are going to the LIV are thinking about. The other side of the coin is the PGA Tour is such a charitable organization, and so many charities depend on the PGA Tour to come to town. And, you know, I always felt really good about being part of something that was so charitable all the time. And, you know, I'd have a hard time not being part of something like that. That's just it. We left town with a good feeling each week.
Amen to that. I agree. I mean, I think that's at the core of both tours, you know, for the LPGA as well, in terms of charity, but also just in terms of inspiration, you know, and you know, it's you know, I look at what the founders built and what the LPGA founders intended, and you know, I think you know, LPGA players are already going to have to ask themselves some tough questions, you know, because it's already under their roof, so to speak. The LET is part of the LPGA. So, you know, it's definitely complicated all the way around for all of golf.
Yeah.
Well, and that's where I go back to, like, you know, the Race to Dubai, and some of these events that were kind of happening over in that area. And there was never really a gripe. One thing I got a question for you, Beth, about is the media side of things. Like, you're hearing that it's not going to be televised. I mean, I haven't kept up on all of this, but I've heard, you know, some of the media giants are saying, no, we're not going to televise it and stuff. I mean, from your side of things, like, is there some pushback as far as what you guys are going to cover, what you're allowed to cover? I mean, or is it, you know, carte blanche, you can do whatever you want to?
I think it depends on which organization, you know, it varies organization to organization in terms of what their strategy is, I guess you could say.
Right.
We didn't have anyone from our specific group in London right now. Of course, you know, we have Eamon Lynch, one of our columnists, has been very opinionated on this subject for a long time. Christine Brennan, the same thing. You know, I did a piece last year looking at China as well with the LPGA, and you know, I definitely think that, you know, as a journalist, we obviously have you know, it's even more complicated when you consider the history of how journalists have been treated over there as well. So and you look at just this past week, earlier this week, the AP writer was escorted out of the room, and he was allowed back in after a few minutes, but you know, it got contentious. So you know, it'll like I said, there's just so many layers to this, and you know, I certainly think that it's important to cover ask all the tough questions and cover how it's impacting the game. I mean, not everyone's going to do it the same, but you know, where I sit, we're not beholden to anybody, and we cover it properly, and we cover it from all angles, and we fairly. I think that's always the word at the heart of everything, is to be fair.
Sure.
Well, certainly with the growth of the game is growing. We know it's growing, and there's going to be other things besides this, and players want more money. And I mean, all athletes are wanting more money, you know, and they're getting more money. And, you know, a story when I was rookie, 1982, I went over to Preston Trails, and I was working with Mr. Nelson at the time. And we worked on the range for just a little bit, and we went in to have lunch, and we sat down, and I looked over, and he had, little tears running down his cheek. And I said, are you okay, Mr. Nelson? And he said, I'm great. He said, you just won $237,000. And that's more than I won in my entire career. And I had a little something to do with the PGA Tour, and I had a little something to do with your golf game. Mm-hmm. So I'm proud of that. $237,000. Think about that. Now, professional golf has come a long ways. You know, you just mentioned two players on the LPGA won $1 million or more. In 2000, when I beat Tiger, it was the first seven-digit check that was ever paid on the PGA Tour. 2000, wow. 22 years ago. Wow. And look at the amount of money that's being paid now. So, you know, I'm excited to see all these young athletes making the kind of money they're making. You know, it's I know what Byron Nelson was feeling. You know, it wasn't – he wasn't jealous of me for doing that. I'm not jealous of anybody for doing that. Look at Jack Nicklaus, maybe the greatest player that ever lived, and he only won $6 million in his lifetime. Career earnings, only $6 million. Wow. So pretty amazing stuff, the kind of money they're playing for.
Yeah, 100%. And I, you know, I think there's two different things there, you know, looking at celebrating how much money, you know, the PGA Tour is playing for and the strides that the LPGA is making, and obviously hoping to continue to close that gap. And then LIV is in its own own category and has different question marks in terms of what should be celebrated and what shouldn't be celebrated. It's like it's completely separate from I think the two tours and the money certainly is what's so controversial.
Yeah, but there was an Asian Tour event probably about a month ago. I saw, and it was on the Golf Channel. It was a co-ed event. They had the guys and the girls. It was interesting. I thought that was a really cool idea. If you could find the right golf course, the right venue to host it. Has there ever been anything like that? And how you may be able to answer this question too. And I mean, I think it'd be something that would be awesome to showcase again, how good these girls are. The guys might get kind of mad when they're playing up a couple of tees, but I thought it was a great idea.
Yeah. So actually what's going on right now this week in Sweden is the Scandinavian Mixed, which is hosted by Annika Sorenstam and Henrik Stenson. And it basically takes 78 men and 78 women. The men are coming from the DP World Tour and the women are coming from the Ladies European Tour. They're playing for the same purse of $2 million and they're playing from different tees. And so it's really fun. Alice Houston was the top finisher last year. Annika and Henrik both play. The amateur I was talking about earlier, Ingrid Lindblad, she's playing on a sponsor exemption because she's from Halmstad, that right there. It's like her backyard. So a really cool concept. It was fun to watch on TV last year, and they talked about the different strategy, you know, that men and women have on the same hole. And you know, you can you know, compare the nuances and the differences in their games and then you know, appreciate the similarities. So I thought it was fantastic. I would love to see something similar you know, on the LPGA with the PGA Tour. When I was a kid, the first tournament I went to was the JCPenney Classic, which Hal knows was, you know, a mixed team event. It was so much fun, you know, watching Davis Love III was paired with Beth Daniel and Tiger was paired with Kelly Keeney and Laura Davies was with John Daly. And it was just a lot of fun. I loved it. And I couldn't figure out for the life of me why it went away and why it hasn't come back.
No,
that's your game, Beth.
How's my game?
Yeah.
Oh goodness. I haven't played as much golf recently as I wish I had. So that's a good question at the minute. But I hope to play more this summer. My number one golf partner died earlier this year, my father. So haven't been able to
play
as I normally would, you know, with him, and I'm hoping to get back out there soon. But I must say that being at the Women's Open last week and seeing so many fathers with their daughters, you know, little girls walking around. And I just really get so excited in my heart to think of all the wonderful memories that they're going to make and what a special thing it is for fathers and daughters, you know, to play together. And I'm just was so fortunate to be able to play with my dad at some of the best places, you know, around the country. And just, we just had so much fun together. And so I'm looking forward to playing more as the year goes on.
Well, I'm sorry for your loss, but at the same time, I'm sure your dad would want you to keep playing the game that the two of y'all enjoy together.
Yes.
So 100%. Get back out there.
I will.
All right.
For sure.
Well, Beth, thanks for being on Be the Right Club Today podcast. You give us some insightful info for the ladies and shared your opinion. You didn't really get out there and take a strong stance one way or the other, but hardly anybody does on the live.
Well, I am in the midst of reporting a story that is literally I'm trying to let the players speak for themselves. And so I'm trying not to put my two cents in too strongly at the minute, because I'm trying to be objective for this story. So I'm sure you can appreciate that.
Fair enough. Well, thanks again, Beth.
Thank you.
Thank you, Beth. Thank you for coming on. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
See you next time.
Be the right club today. Yes!